Welcome to the podcast in the series of health topics. This is number 8, and the topic is autophagy and AGES, A-G-E-S. I am Kelly Gregg, G-R-E-G-G, and my website is kellygregg.com. I do these podcasts to promote my books, which you can find either on Amazon or on the website, and I highly encourage you to buy them. So does my wife. You may not have heard of autophagy, but by the end of this podcast, you will know what it is. Essentially, it is a homeostatic mechanism that your body uses to replenish itself. AGES are advanced glycated end products. These are various compounds that have been complexed with glucose or some other monosaccharide, such that they are not normal. This occurs non-enzymatically. Your body has a tough time disposing of these compounds, and the accumulation over a lifetime can cause numerous problems. This podcast is going to be a little longer than most of my podcasts, but I have also made it available as an ebook. Although I am pretty well read and have been hanging around the life science area for quite a while, I am willing to admit I never heard of autophagy until a few years ago. It wasn't even in my spell checker. Since then, I have been able to incorporate this amazing process into my knowledge of health and nutrition and find it difficult to even discuss these subjects without referring to this process. So do not worry if you've never heard of it. By the end of this book, and perhaps by the end of this podcast, you will have a good understanding of what it is and why you want to encourage it. I am going to request that you remember what I talked about the first couple chapters about metabolism and fasting, especially the metabolic changes that occur in the first few days. First, we have to agree on how to pronounce this word. Auto is like a car. Phagy is pronounced phagy. You can probably even figure out by the definition, as it sounds like self-phagy, which is self-eating. So autophagy on the cellular level would be the cell eating itself. On first blush, you may say that this does not sound like such a good idea. But we are going to think about it a little more. We have about 40 trillion cells in the human body. We are not counting the bacteria in the gut, which may double that amount. Almost all of these cells have a nucleus within which contains DNA. This DNA codes for the production of a million proteins required for the cell to function. This is really an estimate. These proteins make up the little organelles in a cell, like the mitochondria, Golgi bodies, all the little enzymes in RNA, and everything else that keeps the cells going. The cell is constantly making new proteins and occasionally secreting them as hormones. Cells can live quite a while, some a few days, whereas neurons may live 75 years. During this time, the cells are constantly making new proteins and getting rid of old proteins and organelles. As you can imagine, parts of the cells sometimes wear out. By that I mean the protein may become misfolded due to some chemical, it may have been made slightly incorrectly, or some cosmic ray has damaged the DNA. Remember, there may be hundreds of amino acids composing a protein. If the wrong amino acid is accidentally put in the protein, it may still work, just not as well. The body is surprisingly good at reading the DNA code, but not perfect every time. As time goes on, you can see how some of these proteins start to clutter up the cell. Even some of the organelles, such as the mitochondria, slowly, or sometimes rapidly, start to deteriorate. You can think of it as cell aging. If you think a little more, if the cell is aging, that means I am aging. If enough cells age, then the whole body is aging, and voila, that's how we get old. Now you can see where the self-eating comes in. We want to get rid of the worn-out parts in the cell, and in doing so, stave off premature aging and all that it entails. We need to recognize what a wondrous creation your body is. It is constantly making and replacing proteins, building new parts in the cell, and making these cells so that they function in an organ, coordinating these organs so they all communicate and work together. Think about it. You put something in your mouth you found on a tree, and later it appears as part of your toenail. Now, that takes a lot of work. We can all agree that it is a good idea to replace damaged or malfunctioning cell parts. Probably the more the better. We recognize this is a fundamental component of body homeostasis, which is what needs to be done to keep the body alive. Thankfully, we do not have to think about getting autophagy going. Your body does this for you without bothering you at all. It's like digestion. You eat a great variety of food at a meal. Your body separates the various components of the food and selectively absorbs them to be delivered to the appropriate destination. Most of the time, the absorbed contents of the gut are sent to the liver, where amazing transformations of a biochemical nature take place. You don't have to think about it, but you can make it work more optimally, and you can screw it up. Same with autophagy. We can optimize it, or we can screw it up. Guess which one we want to do. I am briefly going to discuss a little about the intercellular process of autophagy. This information is not necessary to understanding most of the book on diet and health. But although the book is written for the common man or woman, there are a few nerds who may read this book. Nothing wrong with that. I have been called a nerd. But you feel free to go into the next chapter if you want. The definition of autophagy is lysosome-dependent homeostatic processes in which organelles and proteins are degraded and recycled into energy. Let's go over the parts of that definition. The lysosome is an organelle within the cell that contains digestive enzymes. Essentially, it breaks down protein and other molecules into their component amino acids. These components can then be converted into energy, or the amino acids can be used to create new proteins or molecules. Your body requires energy to function. Each cell requires energy. The body does not like to waste energy. I mean this in a metabolic manner, not in the manner of playing video games all day. It does not throw away these broken proteins, but can use them as energy. It is more efficient to use amino acids that are already there instead of waiting for you to eat an amino acid, absorb it, transfer it to a cell, absorb it into a cell, and then make some protein. There are a few mechanisms the cell uses and a complicated process to identify which protein has gone wrong, but we just need to understand the process. The cells also identify abnormal DNA. Most of us know that cancer is somehow related to a cell gone drastically wrong. We know it has something to do with the DNA being corrupted. In other words, a mutation. The cells in the body have several mechanisms to recognize abnormal DNA being created during replication and repairing or replacing them. If a cosmic ray happens to hit the DNA while it is being replaced, the body will take care of it. Autophagy is an additional way to take care of the bad DNA floating around. Again, this sounds like something we want to encourage. Now that you may be slightly interested in autophagy, I must confess I am trying to sell you something. I am planning to convince you that autophagy is a beneficial mechanism in your body, and that you should be encouraging it, not messing it up. To do this, you may have to make a few changes in your life. I am going to try to get you to do this for the rest of your life. This is going to be a challenge, but I think I am going to succeed if you are a common man with common sense. Let me add something here that I have found to be slightly confusing. The purpose of autophagy is to get the cell to survive and work more efficiently. Don't forget, it is stimulated by metabolic stress. Yes, it does help clear out some abnormal DNA, but that does not necessarily mean it will cure you of cancer. Maybe it will prevent cancer, but if you have a cancer cell, autophagy is going to try to get that cell to survive and function better just like it would any other cell. Autophagy is sometimes confused with apoptosis, also called programmed cell death. They are similar in that both recycle cellular elements in the cell to be used elsewhere. Your body does not want to waste energy, and it is reusing these elements. Autophagy is stimulated by metabolic stress, whereas apoptosis is regulated by your genes. Autophagy is a continuing process whose rate varies with the metabolic conditions. Once apoptosis starts, it continues to the end and eventual cell death. In the realm of cancer cells, we may want to stimulate apoptosis. Stimulating autophagy may help cancer cells. Both of these processes are part of the homeostatic mechanisms of your body. Now, another topic, which, like autophagy, you may or may not have heard about. Nevertheless, it is married to autophagy. This will require a little biochemistry lingo, but I am sure by now you will be able to understand the concepts, so don't worry about it. A little about advanced glycated end products, which are AGES. This sounds exotic, but is rather simple. The proteins and fats in your body are always undergoing alterations with removal or attachments of different chemicals. The simplest and most common reaction is for an enzyme to attach to a molecule and enable the molecule to either add another molecule or a group of molecules. In other words, building things for your cell. Or perhaps take something away from the molecule. In other words, digesting molecules for energy or modifying the molecule into something else. It takes energy to put chemicals together, and it releases energy when you take them apart. Your body can capture the energy from breaking chemical bonds and use it to make other chemical bonds. Enzymes are just molecules that enables this reaction to occur a little faster, actually really a lot faster, so that we can move around faster than slime molds. The enzymes themselves are usually preserved so that, after the reaction takes place, they can move on to make the same reaction with the same molecule elsewhere. There are many different enzymes in your body. The rate of their reactions and the number of reactions that occur have many different feedback loops, such that the equilibrium of the products is delicately balanced and based on many factors. The more you investigate, the more complicated it becomes, so that in the end you must conclude it is a miracle that life exists at all. You need to appreciate that without these enzymes, reactions would occur very slowly instead of microseconds. Sometimes without the enzymes, the reactions would not occur at all. If you cook meat, you notice that cooked meat tastes different from raw meat. Usually we think it tastes a lot better. The proteins and fat in the meat have been changed by the application of heat. Reactions occur between sugar molecules and protein or fat molecules that result in different compounds called glycated, meaning a sugar molecule has been used to modify the molecule. These are end products, which means this is what is left over after you turn off the heat. Advance just means that what is left over is the result of many modifications that have occurred during the process. There are thousands of these end products that can occur, although some are more common than others. This is an example of advanced glycated end products. We figured some of this out without any science thousands of years ago. You cook meat and it tastes better. We sear or roast before slow cooking because it tastes better. Searing does not hold in the juice, but rather creates ages that we like to taste. I'm going to start saying ages because advanced glycated end products just is too long to keep repeating. The same thing occurs with bread. Everyone knows that toasted bread tastes different from untoasted. That brown stuff on the top is composed of ages, when the heat-activated proteins in the bread combine with the sugar in the bread and form totally different compounds that many people think taste better. Without heat, these compounds would either never form or form in such small amounts that we don't taste them. Fat also forms compounds with the sugar under the energy of heat, such as when we put butter on the bread and toast it. When cooking, you usually need about 300 to 350 degrees Fahrenheit to get the process going. If you cook it too long, you get carbon, which means you broke down the ages into charcoal, which does not taste great. More cooking information of this type can be found by looking up the Maillard reaction, Maillard. In your body, this type of reaction can also occur. It happens much more slowly since the temperature is so low, in other words, not around 325 degrees. Nonetheless, it also occurs. It ends up that the higher the sugar level, the more often it occurs. Now you make toast and you get a reaction in a few minutes. High blood sugar and the reaction may take 20 years to get an appreciable amount present, but still, the higher the sugar, the more you get. Your body is, of course, designed to get rid of some of these ages. Even in the absence of diabetes, you will still make a few. The sugar molecules and metabolites can link other molecules together. Now remember, this is a non-enzymatic process and can occur between all different parts of the molecules. It seems it often will cause cross-linking that results in stiffness of cell walls, vascular walls, throughout the skin, and even in the ocular lenses. Later, I will discuss its role in the nervous system, that is, your brain. There are also age receptors such that when an age, and there are many types, binds to these receptors, inflammation is induced. I have mentioned autoimmune problems several times in the book and how the incidence is increasing along with diabetes and obesity. This may be one mechanism contributing to this phenomenon. Although enzymes make a reaction between two molecules in microseconds, ages are formed without the help of enzymes. But then again, there are millions of reactions taking place in your body every second. So although they may form slowly, you still end up with a significant amount of them over time. You have enzymes that facilitate the combining of amino acids to make proteins, and you have enzymes that degrade these proteins so you can eliminate them or make something else. When you have a sugar molecule combining with a protein in a non-enzymatic manner, you do not necessarily have an enzyme to degrade this product. Your body gives it a try and can clip off various parts of this protein and make it smaller, sometimes small enough so you can excrete it out of the urine like other amino acids, that is, after conversion to urea, but sometimes the protein is too big to get into the urine and ends up somewhere else in your body. You slowly accumulate these abnormal proteins and finally get rid of them when you die. In the meantime, we call this accumulation aging. You can see we want to minimize the accumulation of ages, mainly by reducing the production. This is done by decreasing the episodes of high blood sugar. Your body is designed to operate within a certain level of blood sugar. Too high and bad things start to happen. Of course, having a few thousand episodes of high blood sugar over your life is probably not a big deal, but having tens of thousands may cause a problem. By now, you have already figured out how diet can help minimize this problem. Unfortunately, if you already have a lot of ages from many episodes of high blood sugar, that is diabetes, you can't make the ages go away just by now controlling the glucose. You can help prevent the generation of ages and perhaps encourage your body to eliminate a few more through autophagy. But you cannot turn back the clock. The maintenance diet tries to prevent disease. A brief note about cooking. We intentionally try to make ages by cooking food. The many compounds formed by cooking taste good. We then eat these ages. The question arises, am I raising my age burden by eating cooked food? The answer is probably not. Remember how protein is digested and absorbed in your body. It is broken down into amino acids. Remember, one of the problems with ages is that we do not have the enzymes to break down these abnormal proteins. Hence, we don't absorb hardly any in our diet. If we can absorb the amino acid, that means we were able to break down the protein. This has been studied, and it does not appear to be a significant source of ages. The overwhelming problem resulting in the generation of ages is glucose, and that's where the effort should be made to limit their generation. Fortunately, this is accomplished mainly through the diet, which we can control. We are not trying to eliminate glucose in the diet, as that really cannot be practically obtained, but we are trying to control multiple elevations of glucose level, which we have seen can cause all kinds of problems, primarily insulin resistance. I told you we do not normally absorb ages in our diet. Those of you that read the fine print about protein metabolism noted that I said proteins are normally broken down into amino acids to be absorbed, but occasionally a larger protein is absorbed. This can cause problems in and of itself, as these sometimes activate the immune system. Although I don't know for sure, it's possible that some of these ages, especially the smaller ones, could be accidentally absorbed. Our gut usually does not let bad things get absorbed. If your microbiome is not in good shape, it can allow bad things to get absorbed. We sometimes call this leaky gut. It usually is caused by enlarging the space between the gut cells such that larger elements can get through. As we discuss, getting proteins absorbed that usually get excluded can cause problems, especially with the immune system. If you have a leaky gut, you could get some ages in your system. This is a book about diet, and it is something that you can control. You cannot completely control all the various chemicals in the environment and water supply. Many of those chemicals did not even exist in any significant amount in our history up until about 100 years ago, and regardless of how careful you may be, you will still get some exposure. Your body has been designed to accommodate weird things you may eat, and your gut biome and intestinal cells are your first line of defense. Your diet will enable these to be in as good a shape as possible. Many of you are familiar with hemoglobin A1c. This is glycated hemoglobin, that is, hemoglobin with a sugar attached. Many of you have had this test, hemoglobin A1c, as a test for diabetes. This is a test that measures how much of this substance is in your blood. What we are measuring is how much of the hemoglobin in your blood has been bound non-enzymatically to a sugar molecule. You can see that this is an age. Like other ages, once the sugar has been bound to the hemoglobin molecule, it stays till that hemoglobin is destroyed. Your red blood cells last about 3 months. Hence, the level of A1C is the average amount that has accumulated in the last 3 months. we can determine what level of glucose gives us what level of A1C. This can tell us your average glucose level. Of course, other ages that form in your body are not so easy to get rid of, but this is a good example of the more glucose, the more age. Now, we normally think of this as being glucose attached to hemoglobin, but it actually could be galactose or fructose, all monosaccharides. It ends up that fructose is about 7 times more likely than glucose to do this. Glucose is much more prominent in the plasma, so we usually just say it is an average of the glucose level. But this is another reason to avoid overpowering your liver with rapid fructose absorption and increasing the free fructose in your blood. The glycated hemoglobin itself can cause damage to your body via inflammation or cross-linking to damage and increase oxidation in blood vessels. Another way in which high glucose levels can cause direct damage to the organs. You will hear more about ages as you grow through life, as now you know what they are. They are intimately related to glucose and other sugars in your body. Although glucose is involved in most ages, fructose is 7 times more reactive than glucose. Fortunately, the level is much lower, but high fructose corn syrup can contribute a lot. It appears that your body is designed to be able to deal with ages most of the time. In other words, if you keep your A1C below about 5%, you have much fewer problems. If it goes up a couple of percent, you have lots of problems. You appear to have overwhelmed your body to deal with them. How does your body deal with them? Well, let's go back to autophagy. Autophagy may be quite handy. In fact, it may be necessary for the homeostasis of your body. Your body was designed to last a long time, and it would seem logical that self-repairing mechanisms are in place to assure that it does. We already know cuts heal and bones mend, but we have also commented that many diseases are increasing in modern life, and although we may be living slightly longer, we mainly just have longer times of disability. As we think more about autophagy, this may be the primary method by which people were able to live so long. If we can think more about it, many elements of the modern Western diet have put pressure on your body's ability to rehabilitate itself. I have discussed the increased and more rapid absorption of glucose. I have just discussed how elevated glucose contributes to the formation of ages. Previously, we discussed the gut biome and how adverse effects of the diet and environment may put a greater burden on autophagy and a well-functioning biome. Let me review it in a little more detail. Autophagy is a lysosome-dependent homeostatic process in which organelles and proteins are degraded and recycled into energy. This is the compact definition, but I need to explain this definition. This is just the lingo of biochemistry and something you will easily understand. A lysosome is a spherical vesicle found in almost all cells. It is an organelle, meaning it is part of the living cell and can manufacture different chemicals and parts necessary for its existence. It is not just a balloon filled with chemicals. This vesicle contains many different enzymes and even acids that allow it to break down, that is, digest, many different kinds of molecules. Of course, it is surrounded by a membrane to keep it from digesting the rest of the cell and can engulf different particles or organelles in the cell and digest them within. This organelle has its own receptors and can identify different proteins that have attached to abnormal proteins that need to be recycled and then actively engulf these elements. The process of identifying abnormal proteins, attaching proteins to identify them, transporting these abnormal proteins to the lysosome, and transporting these to the internal part of the lysosome is complex in and of itself. Homeostasis is just the state of the cell living and maintaining a steady internal physical and chemical condition so that it can survive. This means this process is necessary for the cell to survive. Almost all cells of your body conduct autophagy. Your cells have many different components, including enzymes, different organelles that make stuff, DNA that directs what is to be made, and is always changing. Biochemical reactions are going on all the time. You can imagine that things wear out. Sometimes the DNA is not reproduced exactly and can cause problems. Sometimes the RNA is amiss. Not necessarily cancer, but it can cause the proteins to not be made exactly right. They still may work, just not as well. Proteins are oxidized, bacteria enter the cell, sometimes other bad products enter the cell. Autophagy can actually digest some of these bacteria and viruses that are not supposed to be there. When organelles break down and need to be replaced, who is doing the maintenance? Autophagy is the process by which non-functioning or poorly functioning organelles, protein, or DNA is disposed of and replaced. Abnormal elements in the cell can be identified and tagged such that the autophagy vesicles can identify and engulf these particles, again including bacteria or viruses. When these abnormal particles are engulfed, we don't waste them, but they are broken down into their components to be used by the cell to make other things or for energy. This process is going on all the time in the cell. You can see that this is a way for the cell to last forever. The worn-out pieces or abnormal pieces that did not meet quality control can be taken out of service and recycled. The cellular DNA has the information to manufacture everything in the cell. After all, it has already done so at least once. This sounds like a process we want to encourage. What activates autophagy? From the sound of it, we would want more of this happening. It appears the primary activator of autophagy is intermittent metabolic stress of the cell, in which more amino acids or energy is required. This makes sense, as if the cell is under stress, one of the first things we need to do is to get rid of the deadwood. If the enzyme or protein or organelle is not performing optimally, get rid of it and make another. While we are at it, if we need more energy, let's get rid of the dead beats and turn them into the energy we need. This is almost the opposite of apoptosis, which is the programmed death of a cell. Autophagy is trying to get the cell to survive. Perhaps the easiest induction of autophagy comes from exercise. If you are involved in strenuous exercise, and I do not mean just walking a little faster, you put metabolic stress on those muscle groups. You deplete the glycogen stored in the muscle. You increase lactic acid and metabolic byproducts. You decrease the oxygen, and you get short of amino acids. This is a somewhat strenuous exercise. Autophagy kicks in, and you begin metabolizing poorly performing organelles for energy and eventual replacement of those with new ones. Now, this is not stressing every cell in your body, just the ones involved in the exercise. But for those cells, we are increasing their efficiency and perhaps size. We didn't need to know anything about autophagy to know that if we exercise a certain group of muscles long enough, they get stronger and more efficient. Now, I need to talk about induction for a little because I do not think you fully appreciate it. There are millions of biochemical interactions going on in your body at every moment. These require the interaction of proteins, enzymes, substrates, and inorganic materials. The interactions cannot start with nothing and suddenly begin working. For an enzyme to function, the protein substrate must exist and the proper chemical milieu must be present. Somewhere, a DNA strand coded for a transfer RNA strand, which traveled through a complex cytoplasm, itself previously made through a complex process, to a ribosome previously made through a complex process, to manufacture a protein using components bought to the ribosome through a complex process, which is transferred to the cell surface by proteins made through a complex process, and so on. Your body is juggling many things at once just to get something to happen. One reason I say this is to show that these interactions never go to zero. So if we are making fatty acids out of triglycerides, there is always a little going on. Certain enzymes are induced to increase the rate, but it takes time to induce the many proteins involved to increase the output significantly. As the demand continues, the efficiency of the process improves. This could happen over years. Similarly, as the demand abates, the number of proteins, enzymes, and precursors drop. But again, this may take some time. If you start today eating a healthy diet, it may be years to see the final effect. If you decrease carbs, your insulin level may drop slightly in days. It will take longer for your production of insulin in the pancreas to drop a little. It will take longer for the number of insulin receptors in your muscles to increase a little. It will take even longer for your blood sugar set point to go down. It will take even longer than that for the adverse effects of elevated sugar and insulin on your brain and cardiovascular system to begin to abate. There is nothing you can do to accelerate this change. If you induce metabolic stress in a cell, you will eventually induce the enzymes necessary for autophagy. Even if you do not exercise, you still have a little going on. If you do exercise, it still takes a while, sometimes a long time, to induce the process. If you start lifting weights today, it may be years before you reach your maximum weight capacity. Intermittent metabolic stress induces autophagy, but just in the tissue undergoing this stress. If you have a heart attack, autophagy is induced, but I would not do that on a continuing basis. Same with a stroke. What we need is something that can induce autophagy in almost all the cells of the body, something we can repeat over a long time to get the autophagy working at its maximum capacity. By now, most of you know what the answer is. Fasting. Fasting is intermittent metabolic stress for the entire body. Energy and amino acids stop coming in. The cells are having to hustle to keep things going. Autophagy is increasing. This does not happen immediately. Actually, we cannot measure autophagy directly. People smarter than I have determined that the rate begins to increase after about 12 hours of fasting and reaches a maximum at about 36 hours. Now, if you have been fasting regularly for years, you have induced these enzymes and the startup may be a little faster. The maximum rate may be a little higher. It appears your body may have been designed to do a little fasting. Fasting may be part of the homeostasis of your body. Since fasting stimulates autophagy, you would assume eating stops autophagy. And you are right. It only takes a little bit of food to bring the autophagy rate down. It appears to be sensitive to protein, such that half a meatball is enough to stop the increase. I say stop the increase because no matter what, there is always a little going on. This is one reason I do not support the only eat a little fast. It contains all the downside of a reduced calorie diet and does away with the increase in autophagy, which is one of the main benefits of fasting. Maybe my advice for the 12 hours fast daily makes a little more sense. You may not be reaching the maximum autophagy induction, but you are slowly inducing the process. I think we recognize that for most of mankind's history, We ate at sunup and sundown. Most of the time, there was 12 hours fast at night. I do not know if we were designed to fast 12 hours a day, or if it's just a convenient accident to enhance autophagy. In any case, we're going to take advantage of it. Now maybe you have a little more appreciation for the 5-2 fast. If you fast from dinner Sunday to breakfast Tuesday, we get in the 36 hours and reach our maximum rate of autophagy. Do you think that if you did this every month, or maybe a few times a month, that you would be inducing the enzymes necessary for the autophagy process? I know that most people do not require or participate in a fast of several weeks. Now, if someone did that, again, no starvation mode, at the end, would they in better health, the same, or worse health? Has your healthcare provider ever recommended you fast a little? Do you even know anyone that fasted a little? Have you ever fasted a little? We have gone from fasting being an accepted treatment or activity to its being something weird done by the fringes of society. I'm only trying to get you to take baby steps by not eating at night, not only for autophagy, but also to avoid those multiple spikes of insulin that lead to insulin resistance. I am interested in health more than treatment. Many factors have led us to our current state, in which there is an epidemic of diabetes and obesity, as well as many years of disability and poor health. Most of us want to be healthy until you die, and they want to die around age 80. As I considered the historical state of man in relation to diet, it does not appear that starvation was common. Of course, if people starved, they did not leave records, but others did not seem to report a lot of starvation. People in civilization, that is, cities, did not starve or the city would not exist. People lived where they could get food and moved if they could not. Having said that, it did not seem to be an uncommon event that people fasted occasionally. Probably mainly because they just did not have food for a day or two. This probably occurred more often in the winter, as despite the knowledge of food preservation, there may have been a few days without food. This was not a catastrophe. The upshot is that it is not crazy for me to assume that fasting the last few thousand years was much more common than it has been in the last 100. I started out moaning about the increasing rates of obesity, diabetes, autoimmune disease, and cancer in the modern diet years. Is it crazy to attribute some of this to the lack of fasting in modern Western civilization? I will talk more about the brain and autophagy later. By now, you should have realized that ages can have multiple effects on your body, none of them beneficial. We see that aging itself is related to the accumulation of ages. We now see that autophagy may be the principal mechanism by which we reduce the accumulation of these ages. When I talk later about the brain, it may become clear how much we want to induce autophagy. I have persisted with my definition of health: the ability to work, function, enjoy life, and be content. I will make a teeny ebook of the last three podcasts for those of you who want a written summary of autophaging and ages. Of course, you could just buy the big book, Diet and Health, and these will be contained in that book.